Hello, warriors and supporters. CWF presents CRPS/RSD is Real, hosted by our very own Danielle Silverman. Without any further ado, welcome to episode one.
For our first resource, I'd like to welcome Geraldine Lee. Geraldine has been practicing for 30 years in the areas of workman's comp, personal injury, and civil litigation. She has only represented plaintiffs and injured workers in her career, so she knows firsthand how to help all of us. Geraldine first learned about CRPS in 2008 when one of her clients was actually diagnosed. Geraldine, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. For our listeners, Danielle, why don't you explain your experience with CRPS?
Well, thank you. Yes, absolutely. I actually was diagnosed with CRPS well over a decade ago. I had had a failed back surgery and I crushed my sciatic nerve. They thought for years that it was just a failed back surgery, that I was going to have this permanent nerve damage in my back and in my legs. And it wasn't until one day I randomly described shaving as though I was tearing my skin away with a razor. And I had one random nurse practitioner say, "I think you know what you might have." And she sent me out for a three-phase bone study. And I was instantly diagnosed with complex regional pain syndrome. And it was heart-wrenching learning about this and trying to read it online. And it was in remission for quite some time. And then I recently had a surgery a couple years ago where they nicked the median nerve in my arm when they placed a botched PICC line. And the CRPS spread to my left arm, which was completely life-changing. Your whole world seems to come crashing down when you have a new limb that's taken over with this pain. So that's actually, you know, having that happen in the medical field, medical malpractice brought me to searching for attorneys of my own. And I think that's why today's podcast is so important to me, is being able to speak with someone who actively helps represent these invisible patients, workman's compensation, personal injury. It's so important that we have wonderful people like yourself who are well-informed and they understand and believe what CRPS is. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you hit on something that's pretty important, and that's what our CRPS Warriors Foundation is doing, is trying to spread the information and the awareness of what CRPS is. And I'll bet you that you didn't know what it was before you shaved your legs.
No, I had no idea what she was talking about, but I can tell you, searching for it on Google, as soon as somebody gets diagnosed, I tell them, don't Google it. Just don't Google.
I first learned about CRPS when my client came in and told me that she's looking for an attorney who is compassionate and passionate and willing to learn about what CRPS is. And mind you, this was about 15 years ago, and it was not something that was known by even doctors. Her orthopedist said, "I think you might have something called CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome." And she said, "What? You mean fibromyalgia?" Because at that time, everyone knew it was just fibromyalgia, which in my legal world translated to a malingerer suffering from pain. You are right. Just a baby. You just have pain, you know, get over it. So she came in, she brought a lot of literature. And at that time, a lot of literature was not very much literature. Right. And she said, "This is what I have. And are you willing to accept what I have?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm willing to fight for you, you know, but it's trying to get the doctors to understand what you have." And so that was an awakening moment for me. And starting that time is when I have been a champion and a fighter for my clients who have CRPS.
That is fantastic. I'm pretty sure the way most people start to learn is that one little nugget of information. And once you find out what's really back there, it's almost like a peeling back the layers, you find out just how intense it is and how different from fibromyalgia it really is. So thank you so much for taking that time to learn with her. Tell us before we get started, how did you come about the CRPS Warrior Foundation?
So our founder is a fighter, and really a warrior is an understatement. Her name is Deborah Jankowski, and she is one of my clients. And we have been fighting in the workers' comp system for years. And sometime during this fight, where her case is still open, she said, "I can't let other people who have CRPS go through, the pain, go through the fight, and go through the challenges without a support group, without help." So she started this foundation and asked if I would be a part of her board and support the warriors out there as well. And I said, absolutely. It was a no-brainer.
Absolutely. And Deb is just, she's phenomenal. And I can't wait to have her voice on the podcast as well. I know having a podcast is one of her dreams for this foundation. All right. So, I was thinking about how we want to go about today. And I really, with the, oh goodness, over 75 phone calls to different attorneys, I know how frustrating and how important the information is that we get it, but how frustrating it is to try and get the right questions out there for an attorney to hear. So I was thinking what we could do today is sort of go about this from a potential client to an attorney, sort of a consultative approach, so that our listeners can hear the type of questions and the responses that they might get. How does that sound to you?
I think that's a great idea because I get calls all the time, and these are questions that are recurring, right? So I think if we start as if you are a person coming to me and you suffered an injury, we could answer a lot of questions that people would have.
Fantastic, fantastic. So let's go ahead and start there. So if I were to call, and I injured myself at work, I dropped a paint can on my foot, and I don't know what to do now. I love my employer. I don't want to get in trouble. Do I talk to you as an attorney? What do I do next?
Well, I wouldn't advise to talk to an attorney yet, but the very first thing that you have to do if you're injured at work is to report it. One of the requirements in the workers' comp system in California is that you have to report an injury within the year you sustained an injury. So there is no reason to wait to report that injury. Find your supervisor. Find the HR person, find the owner of the company, and say, "Hey, I just hurt my foot, dropped a paint can on it, not sure what kind of injury I have, but I'd like to document it." And if it is painful and you can't walk on it or you can't continue working, then you need to ask to be referred to a doctor, an industrial clinic, or whoever the company utilizes, maybe an urgent care. While I would not recommend staying with an industrial clinic or an urgent care, you are required to go to whoever the employer sends you initially. I call the
Fantastic.
industrial clinic doctors band-aid doctors, right? That's what they're there for. They're there to put a band-aid on you and send you back to work. But it also goes towards documenting that you have an injury. So, in your example, you would likely get an x-ray because we need to make sure that that paint can hasn't fractured, any of the bones in your foot. Maybe you need some medication. Maybe you need to stay off of it for a couple of days. And the industrial clinic or the urgent care doctor can do an initial assessment and be able to put you off of work if you need to.
So with a Band-Aid doctor, I love the way you say that because you're absolutely right. Urgent care is going to put a Band-Aid on you, send you off, and say follow up with your doctor. Or if you get worse, go to the ER. That's really what they do for anything for that matter. If I go to one of them and they like many other doctors, I feel like I'm maybe blown off, or they say I'm okay, but I'm really not, or I feel like I wasn't really listened to. Do I need to see a specialist? Should I go see another doctor? What if I need that extra step?
Yeah, it all depends on your injury. So you go to the Band-Aid doctor, and let's say the doctor puts you off of work for a week. And now, after a week, you go back to the Band-Aid doctor. You're like, hey, I still can't put weight on my foot. And you've returned me to work in a week, but my job is to walk up and down aisles at, let's say, a warehouse type of store.
Right.
So then the doctor will say, all right, let me put you off of work some more and let's get some diagnostic testing. And then the doctor will put you off. So within the first 30 days, you're still going to see a Band-Aid doctor, but eventually, let's get away from the Band-Aid doctor. Okay. That's what I do. I always send my clients after the first 30 days to a specialist. And you can't just go to any specialist. You can't look up your Blue Cross or Cigna or Aetna doctor and go, hey, I want to come see you because I sustained a work-related injury. They're going to turn you away because these insurance companies, your private insurance companies, they cannot treat you if it's a workers' compensation case. Okay, so you have to go through workers' comp, unfortunately. And I'm going to shorten workers' compensation and call it workers' comp so everyone knows. So, depending on the insurance company that insures the employer, they will have different lists of doctors you can see. So, you can't just go to Mr. Greatest Awesome Doctor for feet. You will have to go to the doctors on the list. And my advice is to call up that adjuster, okay, for the workers' compensation insurance. Or the supervisor who sent you over to the clinic and say, I need to see the list that you have of doctors I can choose from. One of the biggest mistakes that an injured person does is that they continue to see the doctors that the insurance company tells them to see. Why is that a mistake? Because that doctor knows to just put a Band-Aid on you and send you back to work. Okay.
Right.
And meanwhile, you've got a very debilitating injury. You might have a hairline fracture or even worse, a displaced fracture. And the Band-Aid doctor's like, toughen up, go back to work. But you go to a specialist and they're not the frontline Band-Aid doctors. They actually value their reputation in the medical community. And you see a podiatrist, a lower extremity specialist, orthopedist, they're going to say, no way. You've got a displaced fracture. We've got to get you to surgery. Okay. And you need to be off for 6 months. And that's the doctor you select as your primary treating physician. Never let the insurance company tell you that the primary treating physician is the Band-Aid doctor. You tell them that I looked on your list. You can Google the doctors, see how many stars they have, or Yelp them, or call their offices, see if they treat this. And then you tell the insurance company, that's who I want as my primary doctor. Okay. Not very many people know this unless they get an attorney. My advice is at this point, you get an attorney. Okay. Because once you know that your injury is a little bit more serious, okay, than just, again, figuratively a Band-Aid injury, then it gets a little more complicated in selecting the right doctors, pushing for medical treatment. So that's what I would do.
I think that's a really important point, that once it's, beyond a Band-Aid, it's time to talk to somebody who understands,
Yeah.
who
And then,
understands and knows how to navigate. Because I think that's a big issue. A lot of patients don't know how to self-advocate, don't know how to navigate the system. So when it
so
becomes,
true.
yeah, when it becomes more, we need help.
That is so true. And, let me bring up something else. So let's say your fractured foot you're getting treatment, and 2 or 3 months later, you start having that intense out of nowhere pain, right? As you're sitting there watching TV and your dog happens to rub up on your foot, and you're like, what is this? Okay. That's what we call a secondary injury. Okay. It's a compensable consequence. You now might have CRPS, okay, to that foot, and you're going to need to see a secondary type of doctor, maybe a pain management doctor, maybe you have to see a neurologist. Okay. So if you get an attorney, then that attorney could spot that secondary injury and say, all right, now you got to see a different doctor. Your first doctor, the primary treating doctor, will remain your orchestra conductor. Okay. And the orchestra conductor then says, all right, you need to go to a pain management doctor. Okay. Now, let's say you start having gastrointestinal issues because you're popping pain medication and muscle relaxants. And now the orchestra conductor says, oof, I got to get you over to a gastrointestinal doctor, or I've got to get you to an internal medicine doctor to address your gastrointestinal issues. So if you have an aggressive primary treating physician, that's great. The doctor can do it himself or herself. But if not, having an attorney to be able to help guide you to say the right things to your primary doctor, and having the attorney being able to talk to the primary doctor and say, your patient has some secondary issues that you might want to address or refer out.
So this would be a really important point to make, that a client, not only when they bring on an attorney and they start talking with them, it's really important for us as patients to be able to tell our attorney, hey, so I'm having this secondary pain, or I'm taking so much ibuprofen that I'm starting to get stomach aches, I'm really anxious, I'm nervous about my employer. Telling them all of these things about your mental state, your physical state, it's really important. That way, you can help us figure out what is a secondary issue and what needs to be addressed and how to go about addressing that.
That's exactly right. On the legal side of it, you're going to tell me that you've got some psychological issues. It's causing you anxiety. Okay. It's causing you some depression. You can't get out of bed anymore without pain. And you used to run 3 miles a day. I have to add that secondary injury, in this example, it would be a psychological injury, to your application before it gets noticed. Okay. On the patient end of it, I tell my clients, go tell your primary doctor. Because if you don't tell your primary doctor, okay, they don't write it in their notes, the insurance company will deny that you even suffered a psychological injury because the doctor isn't putting it on his notes. Okay. So that's why we have to all work in concert. I have to add it to the application to notify the insurance company and the employer, hey, we've got some secondary injuries here. Okay. And then you've got to work with me by pushing your doctors, whoever you're seeing. Is there somebody who's going to request treatment for my psychological issues? Because I can't sleep at night. Okay. One, sleep is important, but you might not be able to sleep due to pain. Okay. And then not having sleep causes you a lot of anxiety and depression and mental anguish because during the day you're super tired. Okay. So from the patient side, you have to also be an advocate. I can do what I can do on on the legal side of it, but I don't go with you to the doctors. And you have to work with your attorney to be able to do that. And if you don't have an attorney and you're your own advocate, great. I love that. I empower a lot of people who call me and say, this is what you need to do. You don't need an attorney because your case may not be big enough for an attorney, but freaking advocate for yourself. This is not the time to be a tough guy or gal. Okay. This is not the time to say, it's not that bad. I'll take a couple of Tylenol, because they won't address the wheel unless it's squeaky.
Absolutely. And I think a really important point to make about the self-advocacy is you're talking about making sure that they put it into the notes. And I have personally dealt with doctors not putting stuff into the notes, and it drove me nuts. So, as from a self-advocacy standpoint, I don't want to go too far off topic. From a self-advocacy standpoint, I think it's important that as patients, we understand we need to tell the doctors, I need you to put this in your notes. We don't need to be afraid of that.
Yep, sorry, I just spoke over you.
That's okay. But yeah, we need to tell them, I need you to put this in the notes, or I need you to write this. And if they say no, then you have every right to say, well, I'm your patient. I need you to do this. And then you ask them why they're not willing to. And most of the time, they don't back it up. It's just they don't want to be responsible. So you have to almost demand that. I'm
That's
sorry, I'm letting you as a medical professional know that I'm having this issue and you're refusing to chart it. They'll chart it.
exactly it. You are exactly right. And you know what? Sadly, there are so many doctors that will not advocate for their patients when they're stuck in this workers' comp system. I don't know what their fear is. It is the most frustrating thing as an attorney when I'm trying to find a doctor on these lists. And there, mind you, the list of doctors that these insurance companies have are not, sometimes they're not great doctors. Okay. Sometimes we find that little, diamond after we go through the list of doctors. But for whatever reason, if they're hesitant, they will not put all these other issues into their reports. And they will not advocate for their patient to go get a secondary treater or a doctor. And I tell my clients, okay, walk in with notes. Okay, and you can list can't sleep at night. Okay, anxiety, yesterday when I saw a, big machine on, a big equipment on the road and it started making noise and I had anxiety because, maybe there was an injury that was caused by a heavy equipment. And you write it down, you bring in the list. And if they don't want to address it, they don't have to because they're an orthopedist. They don't treat, for psychological injuries. That's fine. And go, Doc, I understand that you don't treat this, but can you put it in the report so I can go get treatment from another doctor? Can you request that I see a doctor for my therapy, my psychological trauma that I have? Right. And if that guy says no, what are you going to do? That's when you switch to a different doctor. Remember, on the medical provider network, there are a list of doctors who you can see. You get back onto Yelp and Google and whatever health grades and vitals, and you go find yourself a different doctor who gives a, you know what.
Absolutely, 100%. And I like to tell people, you're not doctor shopping. I hate that term. You are not looking for a specific like doctor that'll only do what you say. It's nothing like that. You are just making sure you are being taken care of appropriately.
That's
And
exactly
that's,
right.
it's so hard to get patients to understand that because there's been such a stigma put on second opinions or even third opinions. It's not doctor shopping, it's taking care of yourself and getting somebody who'll listen.
Right. And in the workers' compensation system, you are allowed to go get a second opinion. Okay. And you are allowed to switch doctors. So it's not called doctor shopping. Okay, if there is a doctor who is so myopic and they only want to see the top of the foot that you injured and that's it, I'm not going to address anything else, then that's not the right doctor for you. Okay,
Absolutely.
that's why there's a list of doctors that you can see. So
Now,
go ahead.
sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I do have a question about that. Especially with complex regional pain syndrome and RSD, especially with this, it's not very well known. So, should I go to a doctor and you're my attorney, and I feel like they don't even know what CRPS is and they're writing me off, Do I come back to you as my attorney and say, I feel like they don't know what it is and they just think it's fate?
Yes. And that's why you also have to interview attorneys. It's really important to interview attorneys so that they understand, what CRPS is. And I am so grateful to that very first client that introduced me to CRPS because I was honest with her. I don't know what CRPS is. And her next question is, are you open to learning about it? Wow. I've never had a client ask me that. So of course I said yes. Okay. So you've got to find an attorney who knows about the condition that you have. And then you've got to find the doctors that know about the condition that you have. Now, you may not know you have CRPS like you didn't, but you have to keep complaining about it. You complain of the symptoms, okay? Symptoms are what you feel subjectively. Then let them find the signs, which is what they can do objectively, okay? Doing certain tests. There are certain diagnostics. And I'm not saying this is just for CRPS, but this is for any type of injury and getting to the bottom of it. And if there's, again, if there's a doctor who doesn't know about it, then move on. Okay. Now, you're not the doctor. So, of course, you are going to have to accept whatever diagnosis your doctor is telling you. There are the Budapest criteria for the, whether or not you have CRPS, whether or not it's a different pain syndrome, such as RSD or fibromyalgia, and you have to trust your doctors, but you get your second opinion. Find out if that doctor is making the right diagnosis and find out if that doctor actually knows about what CRPS is.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I think the next question that I have is probably one of the ones that outside of the medical is even more important because it's the part of us that gets us so anxious. It's if I can't work, how am I supposed to pay my bills? Especially when most of these, when your average worker is working paycheck to paycheck and to miss one paycheck is so scary. So I come to you as my attorney. I'm not able to pay my bills. What do I do?
Yeah. And it happens 100% of the time. Whether you are the sole provider, the primary provider, the secondary provider of your family, every penny counts. I don't know any of us who say, eh, doesn't matter what I make or I don't make, No, it always matters. And what happens when you get injured and you're not able to work, the insurance company, workers' compensation insurance company, has to start to pay you temporary disability benefits. The amount that you are paid is different in every state, so I'm going to only address California. In California, if a doctor puts you off of work as temporarily totally disabled, you can't walk on your foot, you can't work, then you are entitled to two-thirds of your gross pay. Gross is before taxes, before union dues, before insurance. And that pay is in the form of disability. It's not taxable. Okay. So you have to live off of two-thirds of your pay. And you get that temporary disability until a doctor says the magic words, you have reached a plateau. You are permanent and stationary, or you are at maximum medical improvement. So the two-thirds that you were getting, and you were adjusting your lifestyle and canceling some subscriptions to Hulu that you have so that you can live within the two-thirds of your pay, it drops dramatically. So you think two-thirds was hard? Try living off of $290 a week. Danielle, you can't even buy gas and Starbucks at $290 a week. Okay. And maybe go out for a lunch, because you're starving and, you got to eat, right? Who lives off of $290 a week? Apparently, the California legislature has thought, well, that's good enough. Okay. Because the system is not supposed to make you whole. The system is to provide medical treatment to get you back to a stable condition so you can go back to work. Okay. So now these doctors who have uttered the words permanent and stationary or maximum medical improvement, and in an instant you go down to $290 a week, that's called permanent disability. And you will start getting paid permanent disability advances. Okay. Even if you're one of the doctors hasn't released you from care yet, and you get two-thirds, or I'm sorry, you get 290 a week, and hopefully you can get a job back at your employer's, or if your employer won't take you back, then you can go get a different job. But try living off of $290 a week.
Well, the average person, if I'm correct, and this is what it was, a few years ago, but the average person at the grocery store, this is before inflation, was about $100 a week in food,
Yes.
roughly. So that automatically makes it 190 a week. And then you have gas. We're not even talking about the medical bills when it's like, I just need to go get physical therapy or whatnot. Now, workman's comp, I understand there might be some other wiggle room, but if you were going to a normal doctor's appointment that is outside of your workman's comp, just your normal doctor, you can't afford to pay everything.
Yeah.
You just can't live on $290 a week.
Right. So when I meet clients, I tell them I'm going to let them look into my crystal ball, and I'm going to tell you how this is going to end, and it's going to be rough. So even though you're living off of two-thirds of your pay, and that's already rough, I ask them to save a third of that and brace themselves for when it drops to 290 a week. Right. And how? Most people, like I said, they live paycheck to paycheck. So how do you do that? So you look into my crystal ball, and that's what I'm going to tell you, right? You just have to be prepared for that. Some of my clients have ended up losing their cars because they can't make the car payment. Some of my clients have ended up living there in their car because they can't pay rent. And I feel so bad. And what I do on the legal side of it is when I see that, their 2 years is coming up, because that's the maximum amount of payments you will get. Usually there are some exceptions, but very few. They're coming up on their 2 year anniversary of their injury when they've been receiving some temporary disability. I will say to them, be careful. Okay. It's ending soon. And I don't know if there are nice family members you could borrow from or you can move in with, but be careful. And it is a scary warning. Now, I wanted to go back, Danielle, and address something that happens to a lot of people. The insurance company gets 90 days to investigate your injury from the date that you report it. So remember how I said how important it is to immediately report it? That
Yes.
starts the 90 days, okay? Because if you are a tough gal, nothing hurts me, I'm going to take a couple of Tylenol after this paint can dropped on my foot, and I'm going to be back at work tomorrow. And now you wait a month, you've been walking on it, swells up, you wait 2 months, you wait 3 months, and now you report it to your attorney or your employer is going to go, wait, what? When did that happen? Now we're going to have to rewind the surveillance cameras and go check the video cameras to see if you actually did drop a paint can on your foot, or did you injure it when you went surfing, last weekend with
Right.
your friends? So now you've delayed your own claim by reporting it 3 months later, and now the employer gets another 3 months or 90 days to investigate your claim. So now what do? You can't work anymore. Okay. And the employer's waiting 90 days to check out all the video cameras and, videotapes to see if you actually did drop a paint can on your foot. So you're not getting temporary disability. Okay. Because the workers' comp's not going to pay it. So in most states, you can apply through the state's employment development department, or if there isn't one, there's a fund that you can apply to, and it is a state or a government benefit to get the temporary disability. Again, it's around two-thirds through the state. In California, you get it through EDD. And everyone knows EDD is unemployment, but this is for disability. Okay. So you have the doctor that you're seeing who just put you off of work, fill out the disability portion of it. And then you can start receiving temporary total disability through EDD. Okay. And that will hold you over until the employer has time to investigate. Okay. The 90 days. Hopefully, at the end of the 90 days, the employer picks it up. And if the employer says, yes, I see that you did injure yourself at work, and we will agree to accept your claim as a workers' compensation claim, you'll start getting those benefits I was talking about, TTD, temporary total disability, but you have to stop EDD. You cannot collect both because EDD, remember, government entity, they will come at you and they will want that reimbursement for when you double dipped, okay, for EDD and TTD. So as soon as you get that first check for TTD, call up EDD and go, hey, thanks. Thank you for holding me over. I got my check. Okay. And you let EDD fight with the workers' comp for that back pay. Okay. Because ultimately, EDD is your piggy bank. You pay into it. When you work in California, there's a tax that is taken out of your check. It's called SDI. Okay, it's for your disability, state disability insurance. That amount goes into your piggy bank. So you're going to want that piggy bank replenished by the workers' compensation insurance once your case is accepted.
That's a fantastic tidbit to know. So many people don't know those little things. And
Yeah.
that's exactly why we need an attorney in our corner. And I think what you were talking about is really, it brings me to the next question almost seamlessly. And it's, I want to go back to work. And can I go back to work? So, what is the next step there? There's a difference between I need to go back to work and I want to go back to work. And I
Yes.
think it's kind of important to separate the two because mentally and physically, you might not be prepared, but financially, you're like, no, I need to. But let's talk a little bit about can I go back to work?
Okay. Well, we won't be able to know if you can go back to work until you've finished your medical treatment. And when I say finish, if you've got a lifelong injury, it is getting you plateaued. Okay, getting you to the point where you're not going to get that much better unless you get these surgeries. And like my best example would be a knee replacement, right? You can go back to work. Eventually, you'll need a knee replacement, but it doesn't mean you have to keep that temporary disability open until that time. So now, after you've gotten treatment from your doctors, you and your doctor will work through what your restrictions are. Okay. So, using the example of the worker who had the paint can dropped on and suffers a fracture, but now, still has a lot of pain from that injury, can you still walk a mile a day? Because that's how far you have to walk when you're working inside this warehouse. Can you still put weight or carry any sort of weight and put that weight on your foot? Those are called limitations. Okay. Those limitations or restrictions can be temporary while you are rehabbing, but they can be permanent. And when you're released from care, your doctor will give you some permanent restrictions. No lifting and carrying over 50 pounds because that additional weight is going to put a lot of pressure on your foot, let's say. No walking, more than a mile. So you're going to get a list of restrictions from your doctor. And it's up to the employer whether that employer can accommodate your restrictions. So your question is, can I go back to work? My answer is it depends on what your doctor says, and it depends on what your employer will allow. Okay. Employers don't have to bend over backwards and go out of their way to create a position that accommodates your restrictions. Okay. One of my clients suffered a really bad hand and elbow injury. Something happened, she fell. But her duties at work are typing, carrying heavy files, carrying heavy boxes, and now she's gotten all the surgeries that she can get. Okay. And she still has extreme limitations in her hands. Her fingers lock up. And if she's typing a lot, her elbow pain starts to amp up. And then, all of it just stops working. Okay. So in that case, is the employer required to get her a dictation program where she can dictate? Shh, not required, but sure, that seems easy, right? But does the employer have to accommodate the other restrictions where if she needs a file, she has to have somebody who is readily available to go, hey, come get that file for me. And an employer does not have to do that. So that's why we call it reasonable accommodations. Can the employer accommodate your restrictions? Okay, so you kind of have to work together, and the employer has to send a letter to you saying, yeah, we can accommodate those restrictions. Okay, and this is how we can accommodate them. And it has to be on a form, it's official. They can't just call you up and go, dude, just come work. Yeah, we'll take care of you. It has to be on a form. And they have to be able to keep that position open for at least 12 months. Okay. So they can't just say, yep, Danielle, come back and work. We'll try it out. And after a month or two, they fire you. Okay. That's not going to happen. So they have to at least keep you employed for a year. That position has to pay at least 80% of your pre-injury salary. Okay. So maybe they have you doing something else. You've gone from a physical job to now a desk job. And great, the desk job doesn't pay as much, but it still has to pay at least 80%. And then, of course, they have to accommodate your restrictions. So can you work? Yeah, sure. But it has to be based on you, what your doctors say your restrictions are, and your employer as to whether they can accommodate you.
So I think that leads to, this is something I just went through, so it's very near and dear to my heart, but I want to go back to work. And let's say I have all the accommodations, I try to go back to work, and I can't make the return to work work, if you will. I can't, it just isn't working out properly. Personally, with my hand injury, my job was typing. I can't type fast enough. I was typing over 100 words a minute before the injury. After the injury, I couldn't type, 20 words a minute. My left hand didn't know what it was doing. So here we are. My employer, let's say they try and I go back and I just can't make it work. What happens next?
Right. Well, in that example where the employer tries, okay, and it doesn't work, then you and the employer have to agree this is not going to work. Your case is still open for future medical care. You go get your treatment that you need. The doctor might put you off of work again, okay? And you might return back to temporary disability, or you might have additional restrictions. But I want to address whether I want to address the situation where the employer cannot accommodate you. Okay.
Very, very, very common.
Right. And a lot of employers, practically, they can't accommodate, right? Because they're not a big company. My firm's really small. And if I require another person part-time to help out, that's going to kill my business. I just can't do it. Now, even if it's not a small business, the employer says, I can't have you back because I don't want to risk you falling. Okay, you got a bum foot because you got this, fracture that's not healing very well. And now you're going to, climb up ladders. And because of your bum foot, you're going to fall off the ladder. Now I've got another injury I've got to deal with. You just broke your hip falling off. I don't really want you back. Okay. And the employers can say that. I don't really want to take you back. Then what can you do? Then you've got to go find something else. Okay. And that something else has to wait until the employer says, I can't take you back. Okay. A lot of my clients say, I want to go do something, anything. Okay. I'm capable. I've only got a bum foot. I can sit and answer phones. I could be a Walmart greeter and sit on a stool. I want to do something. Okay. And I have to say, you got to give the employer a chance to see if they get the right of first refusal. Okay. So once they say no, coolio, go get a job because it's going to pay you more than $290 a week, that's for sure. My only caution is this: if you haven't settled the workers' compensation case, okay, and your employer hasn't been able to accommodate you and just, through financial desperation or need, you need to go find another job, please make sure that job is within your restrictions. Remember, we spoke earlier about a doctor giving you restrictions. Okay. And when you go out there outside of working for the employer and you find a different job and you find something that is beyond restrictions, okay, beyond your restrictions. So now you are climbing up ladders and now you are, walking miles and miles. You're going to look suspicious. Because your doctor just said you can't do that. So have you been lying to your doctor this whole time? Okay, have you been exaggerating your symptoms? So if you do take on a job that is not at the employer's, make sure they fit within your restrictions. Now, after your workers' comp case is closed, I don't care what you do. Okay, but the last thing I want is to receive a surveillance video. And I get these often so that they're watching you and you're doing things that are way beyond your restrictions. Now I have to be able to explain that. And I don't like to explain that.
Absolutely. Stop posting pictures of yourself surfing in California while you're supposed to be disabled.
Exactly. Or, but, and I tell my clients, it doesn't mean that you are locked up in your house. You still have to live. One of the most important things when you sustain a work-related injury and your doctor has put you off of work is your mental health. You will go crazy. If you are a person who is used to working 40 hours a week and now you sit at home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you will go nutsos. There is only so much Judge Judy we could watch every day, right?
Absolutely.
So go do something. I want you to get out of the house. I want you to take the trash out, okay? But I don't want you lifting and carrying big 10-gallon water jugs and hoisting them into the back of your car when you've got a back injury. Okay.
Absolutely.
I don't want to explain that.
So here we are, Can you tell me how long is the case going to last? Is it even worth it if it's going to be a couple years?
I get that question so often, Danielle. And I always say, go get a magic eight ball and ask the magic eight ball, because I can't answer how quickly your injury is going to heal. Okay. It all depends on you and the types of injuries you have, and how quickly you're going to heal, and how well you're going to heal. So if you came to me and you said, oh, I was using a box cutter and I cut my finger and I now have 5 stitches, how long is my case going to last? I'm going to say 3 weeks. How long does it take for you to heal from a cut? Right? 2 weeks, or until you get your stitches off. But if you come to me with that same injury and you have sliced tendons and ligaments, that's going to be a lot longer. So when I'm asked that question, my response is, let's see how long it's going to take your body to heal. Let's see what the doctors want to do with you. If you have a back injury and your doctor wants you to get a back surgery, that healing time is about 6 to 9 months. Okay. So it's 6 to 9 months of healing and therapy and rehab. But does that mean your case is only 6 to 9 months? No. Because at the end of 6 or 9 months, the defense attorney is going to go, well, I don't agree with what your doctor is saying about your disability and your future medical care and the recommendations for other surgeries. I'm going to go get an independent doctor. Okay. They're evaluator. They're called panel qualified medical examiners or evaluators, or we can agree on one to give us an opinion as to what your limitations are. What is your impairment? What kind of future medical care are you going to need? Because we don't think you're going to need 5 more surgeries. Okay. So that process, that evaluation process, could take another 6 months. So it depends on the severity of the injury. It depends on how many injuries, because remember, we were talking about secondary injuries earlier. If we add on additional secondary injuries as you're limping around on your right foot, you're putting more weight on your left foot. And now, 3 or 6 months into your injury, you've got a left foot injury. It's called an overcompensation. Well, that's going to need treatment and evaluation. And so it could go on and on and on. Sadly, I have a case that is going on 15 years.
Wow.
And then I have cases where my clients are awesome. Their bodies react really well to surgery. They're able to get the surgery, they're able to recover, and they're able to return to work. So, within a year. So it could be a year. But a workers' compensation case that I would take is one that has a lot of permanent disability predicted. Future permanent disability. So those end up taking a lot longer, about a year to 15 years.
That's incredible, right? 15 years. That's incredible. And I have no doubt that they did not expect that to last that long. Nobody ever does,
No.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate this conversation today. I happen to know that there are so many people out there that need more of this. And I think that having more and more conversations with you will allow people to get the information, and it's just so important. And I think the information that they need, as we discussed at the very beginning, they don't even know the right questions to ask sometimes. And it's really is a game sometimes. You don't know the right questions to ask, so you don't know the answers that you're going to be given, but you know it's not what you need.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And, again, these are the common questions that I am asked, and they're frequently asked questions, but everyone's case is unique.
Absolutely.
And something that's really important, and this could be a separate podcast, is from that workers' compensation claim of an industrial injury, there might be other types of cases. There could be a discriminatory case where you now are off of work and you're not asked to participate in your review and you're getting demoted, or you're being harassed when you get to go back to work on a limited basis. So there's an employment issue. There could be a product's liability issue. Maybe the product that you were using or this machine that you were using is faulty. And, now you've got a claim for product's liability. So there are other spin-offs, okay, and the legal term are crossover cases that may stem from your workers' compensation case. And I always try to spot those out. As a civil litigator, I know what other cases there might be stemming from your workers' compensation case. So, we can talk for days, Danielle, me and you.
Yes, absolutely.
And explore so many other things that could arise from just a single injury. So I look forward to helping our warriors out there, and maybe doing another one of these with you and maybe addressing some other issues.
Absolutely. In fact, I have a couple ideas that I think that you and I can rattle around, and we could probably come up with an entire series of just ask an attorney what.
Absolutely.
I think it's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. I look forward to the next time we speak.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. And this was so much fun. I know that it seems like it was a long time, but to me, it really flew by. So hopefully we were able to
Absolutely.
help, help some of the warriors out there.
Most certainly have. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle and Geraldine, for giving us so much valuable information that could really change a warrior's life within episode one. Episode two will be released on February 1st with special guest Dr. Peter Bregman. If you would like to help us support warriors, please text CWF Podcast to 53555. That's all caps and no spaces. You can find all updated information on future episodes across our social media, on our website at crpswarriorsfoundation.org, or you can subscribe to our Podbean channel. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see